We're holding on Memtes Amud Aleph, four lines from the top. We learned yesterday, our Mishnah had told us that a nizik, somebody who a hezek has been done to them, gets paid out of edith, out of the best quality land. And we talked about how that relates to a machloikus of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, when the pasuk says, in this week's parasha, meitav sadeo, meitav kami yishalem, that the person allowed his animal to graze in somebody else's field, he has to pay out of the best of his field and the best of his vineyard. Who is best? Do we mean land equivalent to the nizik's best, even if it's mazik's worst, or land equivalent to the mazik's best? So we said so far, we said, at least the surface understanding of the braisa that we brought, is that Rabbi Shmuel is saying you go according to the nizik. You look at the nizik's best quality, and the mazik has to pay that amount, even if he himself has better quality land. And then we said, Rabbi Akiva said, no, the pasuk is telling us that you give a nizik from idis for kavachoyim lehektish. What kavachoyim lehektish is, we'll discuss further down on the Amud, which on the face of it means that he holds that you take the mazik's best property and give it to the nizik.
Even if the mazik's worth is much less than...
No, so obviously it would be a smaller amount of land, because you're not going to pay the nizik more than what was taken away. Tosfos, by the way, talks over here, before we get into the Gemara, Tosfos talks about that, you know, we were talking about the question yesterday, couldn't it be the other way around? Couldn't it be that sometimes Rabbi Shmuel is more machmir, suppose that the nizik has better quality land than the mazik?
But what difference does it make? We're going proportionate to the amount of damage.
No, but it's still what kind of land. It's still better to get a smaller amount of really good quality land than a larger amount of poor quality land.
But if it's
higher quality land, eventually, you know, you're still going to get more out of it for less work. You're going to get.
On the other hand, yeah. You could say maybe there's less work in terms of agriculture, but in terms of vineyard, you can build much more and more.
Right, but we're talking about agricultural land. We're talking about the kind of land that you're likely to use for agriculture, not for building houses.
Okay.
Listen, I mean, when they figure out the value of real estate, when you talk about it is business and Buddhist, you know, that also, that does factor into what the possible uses of land are.
So it's agriculture, it is,
yeah.
Or it's binyanim?
We're talking about primarily agricultural. Okay, anyway, so Tosfos points out, I mean, what would happen if the other way around? What would happen if the mazik had lower quality land and the nizik had the higher quality land? Wouldn't you say then that Rabbi Shmuel is machmer? So, for one thing, Tosfos says that, no, you're not going to say, according to Rabbi Akiva, that if the mazik doesn't have higher quality land, that you're going to make him buy such land in order to give to the nizik. Necessarily, then, yes, he's going to give out of whatever is his best, even though that's not as good as the nizik's best. But we're not talking about that. Anyway. Okay, so my time with Rabbi Shmuel, what is Rabbi Shmuel's reason that he says you look at the value of the nizik's field and you give him meitav relative to that? Nemer sadeh lamasav and nemer sadeh lamayla. You have twice in the pasuk that uses the word sadek. Yaveh sadeh kerem. Somebody sends his animals out, and somebody left his animals loose, and they go and graze in somebody else's field. And the pasuk finishes, meitav sadeh, meitav kami yishalem. And he has to pay the best of his field and the best of his vineyard. So, ma sadeh hamur lamayla du nizik. The first sadeh in the pasuk obviously is the nizik, because that's the one that the animal damaged. So the sada in the second half of the pasuk must also mean the nizik's field. The meitav sadehu must mean something equivalent to the nizik's best field. Rabbi Akiva says, okay, but the second half of the pasuk says that he has to pay meitav sadehu. Yishalem obviously refers to the mazik, so it makes sense. The meitav sadehu also refers to him, his best, not the nizik's best. So what would Rabbi Shmuel answer to that? He would say, okay, so you have on the one hand Gzeder Shava, and I'll be the first time we talk about, are we talking literally Gzeder Shava, or Gili Da, or Gili Mil Chabalma, whatever it is. Okay, on the one hand, you have the two words Sada in the Pasuk, which we should think makes equal. On the other hand, you have, it's true, Rabbi Akiva is pointing out that from the context of the word Mecha Sadehu Yishalem, seems to mean the Mazik. So Rabbi Shmuel, Ahani Gzeder Shava, Ahani Kra, as a matter of fact, we're going to use both of them. The Gzeder Shava helps us understand part of the meaning, and the simple meaning of the pasuk helps us understand the other part of the meaning. The Gzeder Shava helps us, we use that for what we said, that according to Rabbi Shmuel, the word sadeh over here, meitav sadehu yishalem, means nizik's best, means something equivalent to the nizik's best. Ahanikra, what are you doing with the simple meaning, meitav sadehu yishalem, which Rabbi Akiva says on the face of it means the mazik? That teaches us the isfa, the mazik, idis, the Buddhist. That if the mazik has it is good quality land, but the Buddhist and poor quality, v'ziburis didei loy shav yekeidis benizek, and his ziburis is not worth as much as the idis of the nizek. Meaning, Tosfos points out, by the way, that the Gemara has a discussion in Bava Kamma about the question, when we talk about idis, beinus, and ziburis, are we talking about objective standards of idis, beinus, and ziburis, or are we talking relative terms? In this case, for example, the nizek might have something which, relative to the rest of his field, is idis, but relative to what anybody else would consider is beinus or ziburis or something. So here we're talking in terms of that. We're talking relative standards. So if the mazik ziburis is worth less than the nizik's idis, then the mishalom lemeitav. Then you're going to say that if his ziburis was worth as much as the nizik's idis, that's when Rabbi Shmuel would say that's when you use the gzeira shava sada to say that he can pay in that even though it's his own ziburis. And only our Mishnah tells us that mepetchik kadoilam, you don't allow him to do that. You make him pay from his own idis. But suppose his ziburis is worth less than the nizik's idis. He can't get away with paying his ziburis because that's not the equivalent to meitav of the nizik. Necessarily, we have to go up to his idis, even though that is in fact worth more than the idis of the nizik. That's what meitav sadehu yishalim teaches us. The two different cases, and they're therefore two different limudim in the pasuk. Rabbi Shmuel would say.
Even have a way on this.
We're talking he only has idis and ziburis. No, if he had Bainus as well, it would be a similar idea. He'd say the Ziburis is worth less, so he can't get away with paying that. The Bainus is worth more, so he does that. He wouldn't go all the way up to his Idis. But here we're talking about he only has Idis and Ziburis. The best that he has, right. No. Because Rabbi Shmuel would say that. Rabbi Shmuel would say, given that basically it's supposed to be Mate of Sadehu of the Nizik, you can't go all the way up to Idis of the Mazik unless there's nothing else that's worth more than Idis of the Nizik. If there is Bainanus available, then good, he can pay out of that.
You start with the Ziburis,
but if it's worth less, then you go up to Bainanus, and if there's no Bainanus, or the Bainanus is also worth less, then you go all the way up to his Idis. That's Rabbi Shmuel. Okay, then we said in the Brayse, so Rabbi Akiva comes and says that no, the Pasuk is only coming to tell us that a Nizik gets paid out of Idis, and a kavachomer for hektish. So let's focus on that. My kavachomer for hektish.
He's only.
So far we were learning that what Akiva means is that the nizik gets paid out of the mazik's idis. And let's forget about Rabbi Shmuel's idea of you look at the value of the nizik's idis and then you look at what the mazik has parallel to that, regardless of whether it's his own veininess or his own ziburis or what have you. No, Rabbi Akiva says you go straight up to the mazik's idis. At least that's how we're understanding it so far. Later on,
and you
get paid in that. Yeah.
So that's a penalty, really.
According to Rabbi Akiva, that's how it is midin torah. In other words, not like Rabbi Shmuel would say it's only the same tikkun olam. Rabbi Akiva would be saying so far that it's derudai.
That's a penalty.
Yeah. Yeah. Tosfos talks about that when Rabbi Akiva uses the expression loy bo hakasu, that what Rabbi Akiva means is the pasuk is only coming to be machmir on him as far as this matter of idis
of the mazik,
yeah. Because Tosfos points out there could be other nuances of this whole business, which we'll talk about when we get to Bava Kamma. That's the Shem. There are other nuances of this whole business, regarding how the payment is arranged. There's a discussion over there, for example, are we talking only land, or are we talking about that the nizik has the right to say, you know what, I'd rather have money or metatlin. There's a whole matter of bimashuyer shabai of getting paid out of what remains by the mazik.
Yeah.
Okay. So these are all nuances that we'll deal with more in Bava Kamma. But anyway, yeah. So my kavachem lahepish. Are you talking about a case, for example, where an ox belonging to a private person gored and killed an ox belonging to Hektish, and you would say that in that case, Rabbi Akiva would be saying that even if the Nizik was a regular person, not Hektish, he would be paid out of Idis, how much more so Hektish should be paid out of Idis? You can't say that. The Pasuk says, also in this week's parasha, if somebody's ox gores his fellow man's ox, which the word re'eu teaches us, but not hektish. Yeah. which Tosfos gets into a bit of a discussion over here. Rashi also discusses it in Bava Kamma. That pasuk is talking about. Now we know from the beginning of Bava Kamma, Abba is the Zikin. There's four major types of hezek. Besides that, a shur can cause damage using its kere and using its horns or other unusual ways of harming something. There's also shein v'regel, eating things, which is a normal thing for it to do. Kicking things as it walks, or brushing by things with its feet as it walks along, which is another very, very common kind of damage. By those, you don't have any miut to say that you shouldn't pay hektish. Why doesn't the Gemara say that that's okay? By keren, you have a miut of the word re'ehu, that you don't pay hektish for that. But maybe by shein v'regel, you do. So Tosfos gets into quite a bit of discussion about it. Tosfos ends up saying that actually, the real limud that we have, here the Gemara is bringing over here the pasuk Shor Re'ehu, but the real limud from which we learn that you don't pay hektish for any kind of nezek, you do did up on, and we'll learn about that later in the parak in a few blocks. But Medaraisa we're talking about is actually from a different pasuk having to do with truma. He's the ish ki yochal kodesh b'shgaga. The pasuk says if a person eats truma b'shogeg, then he has to pay keren b'chomesh, prakla mazik, as opposed to if he's mazik deliberately, then he doesn't. So from there we learn primarily that you don't pay. The ish ki yochal kodesh b'shgaga, that if he eats. Not so much b'shgaga, we're not focusing on the shgaga part, but the k'yochol we're focusing on. If he eats, as opposed to if he's mazik. Anyway.
So if you eat truma b'shogeg,
you chayv mechayv mitzvah b'dishamayim. But if you eat it b'shogeg, you chayv keren b'chomesh. But if you ate it b'shogeg, not if you damaged it b'shogeg, that's the point.
Right.
So primarily it's from there that we learn.
Mind that if you damage it,
then you're not chayv. Midaraisa, anyway. Then you're not going to pay anything. Yeah. Funny thing, by the way, on this week's parasha, the Ezra, you know, a lot of times has sharp things to say. He quote on this the Eben Ezra. On this pasuk, Shor Re'ehu, he quotes from a koroi named Ben Zutta, who wanted to explain that the word Re'ehu over here doesn't mean your fellow man's ox, it means its fellow ox. V'chiyigiv Shor Ish as Shor Re'ehu. If an ox gores its fellow ox, another ox. So the Ebenezer says, yeah, the only fellow that an ox has is this Ben Zutta. The Re'ehu means a fellow man, not a fellow animal. So v'lo shoshal hektish. You can't say that's what Rabbi Akiva means, that kavachomer you should have to pay hektish if you cause hezek from idis. Hektish you don't pay b'chlal. El or no? Let's try la'omer harei mona lebedek habayis. Suppose that you have somebody says, I promise to give a money to Bedek Abayis, to the Beis HaMikdash, to Ossi Gizbo v'shokol me'idis, and then you would argue that if he doesn't pay up, the Gizbo, the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash, can come and take from his idis to pay it off. The question is why? Lo yehei el b'alchov. Why? Hektish in that case is no stronger than a regular b'alchov. Shouldn't be any stronger than a regular Balchov, or Balchov didn't have a Beninus. And a Balchov, as it says in our mission, it gets from Beninus. Really, actually, we're going to learn tomorrow that a Minat Torah, a Balchov gets from Ziguris. Some of the talk about why the Gemara is mentioning here Beninus, but the maximum he would get is Beninus. He's certainly not going to get Idis. Why should we assume that Hektish? Yeah. So why should we start? No, a regular person. So why should we assume that Hektish should be any stronger? Where does Rebbe Akiva get his Kavachomer? So you might answer, yeah, maybe Rabbi Akiva disagrees with our Mishnah. Maybe he holds that a Balchoy does collect from Idis, just like a Nizik. Problem with that is, Ikel Mifrach, you could slog it up. Even if you were to say, fine, let's say he says that a Balchoy is the equivalent of a Nizik. Because after all, you borrowed money from the guy, now you're defaulting on the loan, you're making him have to go collect it, basically. Maybe in that sense he's like a Nizik. Okay, and therefore you could argue that then he would say, so fine, a regular Balchov collects from Idis, therefore Hektish should collect from Idis as well, in this case, where the person owes them. The problem with that is, Ikel Mifrach, you could slog up such a Kavachomer, because Mala Balchov can yop a Kosim in Izakim. How can you compare a Balchov who has a stronger position when it comes to Hezek? This same Balchov, if you, instead of borrowing money from him and not paying back, and now he has to collect from your land, if instead you would cause him a Hezek, and he has to collect from your land, he'd be entitled to collect from Idis, Meitav Sadeu. Toma behektish akin hura kosab in Izakin. How can you compare hektish as a weaker position? We just said, shora eu vele shor hektish. So hektish never collects on Izakin anyway, Daraisa anyway. So how can Rabbi Akiva think to make a kabachayim a madach, a regular balchayim collects from Idis, let's say he holds that kabachayim a hektish, but hektish has a weaker position as far as Izakin. Because they never collect on Mizrachim. So why should we think they have a stronger position as far as a Baal Chalev? Yeah. The answer is the Gemara says, no. Olam did not say Torah Didan, the Torah Dehekdesh. Let's go back to our previous assumption, our initial assumption, that we're talking about that an individual shur gored and killed a shur of Hekdesh. So now you're asking, what about what happened? What about shur Re'eu? That means you don't have to pay at all. The answer is Rebbe Akiva, Savalak Reb Shimon ben Menasya. Rebbe Akiva would hold, like the opinion of Reb Shimon ben Menasya, the Tanya, and learn it right, Reb Shimon ben Menasya, Shur Shal Hekdesh, Nogach Shur Shal Hedyat Potter. If an ox of Hekdesh gores a shirt of an ordinary person, then Hekdesh is potter from paying for it. However,
that conforms to what we do.
So far, well, we didn't talk about that so far. We talked about that if you damage a shirt, that if your shirt damages a shirt of Hekdesh, you're potter. We didn't talk about if Hekdesh's shirt damages yours. So Rav Shimon ben Menasya is saying that in that case you potter, v'shal hedyat shenogach l'shur shal Hekdesh. But if it was the other way around, an ordinary person's shirt damaged a shirt of Hekdesh, then it's the other way around. Vein tam or vein mu'ad, mashalim nezek sholim. Regardless whether your ox was tam or mu'ad, so it's one of the first two or three times or after that, you pay nezek sholim. So he says exactly the opposite. When we say shur re'ehu, it's the opposite. The Chachamim were arguing before the word shur re'ehu means that if it's not re'ehu, if it's Hekdesh, you pay nothing. He's arguing the other way around. Shur re'ehu means the other way around. By re'ehu, we have the difference between tam and mu'ad. When it's not re'ehu, when it's Hekdesh, then you've got to pay the whole deal for the nezek sholim even the first time. So Rabbi Akiva might hold like that. So in that case, then fine. So the Hekdesh does have the ability to collect on nizikin. And you would argue, therefore, that, well, they're no worse than any other nizik. They collect from Idis. And therefore, so that then that's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. Kavachomer lehekdesh. If a regular nizik collects from Idis, then how much more so in a case where Hekdesh is going to be collecting on Nizakin, namely according to Reb Shimon ben Menasya, how much more so they should be collecting from Idis?
That's because of this.
Because he's darshaning Re'ehu the other way around. That Re'ehu, there's a difference. If your ox is a tam, you pay chatzi nezek. And if it's a muad, you pay nezek sholim. But by Hekdesh, there's no such distinction. Always nezek sholim. The Gemara asks, Ihochi. So if you're going to say that, if you're going to tell me that Rav Akiva agrees with Rav Shimon ben Menasya, then let's go back to earlier in the sugya. We started by asking the question, our Mishnah told us, Hanizakin Shaman Lahem Ve'idis, and we asked, how is that Mitnei Tikkun Olam, like all the other Takanas over here, on the face of it, it's Daraisa, and we brought in the Machlokas of Rabbi Shmuel and Rav Akiva. And how did we end up explaining? How did we end up explaining what Rabbi Shmuel means when he says that you go according to Meitav Sadehu of the Nizik? So we talked about it at the end yesterday, that it can't mean that regardless of what kind of plot of land was damaged, you always give him an equivalent size plot of land of Idis, because then it could come out that you're giving him more than what he lost in damages. So rather, it meant we said. We started bringing in the case where the Nizik's Idis is the equivalent of the Mazik's Ziburis. And then we said that Rabbi Shmuel would say you give him out of Ziburis, and Rabbi Akiva would say you give him out of Idis. Now, if we're saying now that Rabbi Akiva holds that Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya, that Hekdesh is also able to collect on Nizikin, Mimai debe Idis the Nizik is Ziburis the Mazik's Ligi, who says then, why do we have to assume that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel's argument about whether we go according to Idis the Mazik or Idis the Nizik, that talks about a case like that where they have lands of different qualities. Dilma de Kula Amma b'de Nizik Shemin, and why don't we just say that everybody would agree you look at the Nizik's Idis and go according to that, and then the Mazik pays according to that. B'chocha b'klokas de Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya v'rabbanan k'mifrigi. So rather, the machlokas between them is that they're arguing about this very machlokas. Do you pay Nizik into Hekdesh? No, do you pay Nizik into Hekdesh or not? The argument has nothing to do with do you look at the Mazik's Idis or at the Nizik's Idis. The machlokas would rather be in a case where you cause damage to Hekdesh, do you pay Hekdesh out of Idis or do you not pay them at all? Rabbi Akiva Savalak Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya. So Rabbi Akiva then would be saying, like Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya, that you do pay out of Idis. And therefore, that's what he's saying, Loibar Akosav Elalugbus on the Zakamina Idis. Rabbi Shmuel, Savalok Rabbanan, whereas Rabbi Shmuel would hold, like the Rabbanan, that you don't pay that at all. So, Re'ehu means not, but not Hekdesh. So, therefore, what would it mean? We'd say Rabbi Shmuel would say that he'd go make a Sadeh Shal Nizik or make a Kamer Shal Nizik. And Rabbi Akiva would say, I agree with that. Make a Sadeh Shal Nizik or make a Kamer Shal Nizik. However, I'm also informing you that if this were to happen, not with an ordinary person, but with Hektish, you would have to pay as well. You would have to pay out of your idis as well. The answer is in Ken, my loy bar kosu. If that's the case, then what does he mean? What would Rabbi Akiva mean by saying loy bar kosu? The pasuk is not coming to tell us what you're telling me, make a seder shel nizik, but rather what would he mean? He's not arguing on that point on the meaning of the pasuk. He's adding this detail about hektish. Well, wait, my kavachomer la hektish, and also what kind of kavachomer do you have over here? Namely, Rashi says that you're telling me that there's a kula, that instead of going and being machmir and saying that you have to pay out of your own idis, we're going to be mekel on you and say that you only have to pay equivalent to the nizik's idis. So what kind of kavachomer are you bringing? What kind of kavachomer are you bringing from hektish? Are you bringing to hektish rather? Tosfos discusses that and what exactly Tosfos. Hello. Tosfos says that Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos learns a couple of possibilities what the Gemara means by this question over here. Number one, if Rabbi Akiva is only arguing as far as this matter of hektish, then what is he answering? Then what is he mentioning? Kavachomer lahektish. Rabbi Shmuel himself agrees on the Meitav thing. They're only arguing about the question of whether hektish gets paid or not. The expression kavachomer lahektish doesn't really flow. Rabbi Shmuel holds you completely potter, but he's not arguing that there's a different kind of payment that's made. He just says there's a kosher from a rei potter. The answer to that is not kavachomer. The answer is you darshan the potter differently. And then Tosfos brings from Shlomo Merodosh, we talked about him a couple of weeks ago. He's known in many places in among the Rishonim as Hakadosh Merodosh. Apparently, he was killed by Kiddush Hashem, although history doesn't record. And Radosh, Droyish, it's a city in France. Drew, I think it's called in modern France or something. I don't know. Anyway, that. So he explains, what do we mean, my tabachomer lahektish? When you get down to it, if Rabbi Akiva were to say that you're going according to idis, that you're going according to idis and nizik, hektish could own land anywhere. You never know what their idis is. So how can you possibly say that you're going to look at the idis of the nizik and pay according to that? You think that hektish has such and such land, but they might have other land. They could have land anywhere in Eretz Yisrael that somebody donated to them. They could have much better idis than you're aware of. So necessarily, if you were to say that you go according to the nizik, exactly. Then would when it comes to hektish, they could have. You think that they have something which is their idis, and fine, you have the burdus which is equivalent to it. They could have more. They could have greater idis someplace else. So necessarily, therefore, of course, in the case of hektish, you're going to have to go according to the mazik. But what's the kavachomer hektish?
You can go by the nizik practically.
And then one more is that Ramban says the Gemara's question is very simple. If Rabbi Akiva's whole thing is talking about hektish, what's kavachomer lahektish? He's already talking about hektish. What is the word kavachomer lahektish adding? V'oid, and besides that, the Gemara says, ha amar Ravashi. Ravashi says that tanya behedya. We have an explicit raisa that meitav sedeir meitav kami yishalim means meitav sedeir shal nizik or meitav kami shal nizik di Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva means meitav sedeir shal mazik or meitav kami shal mazik. So there you go. It's clear from this braisa that they're not arguing about Rav Shimon Manasseh's point about whether you pay hektish or not. They're arguing what Meitav Sedeh or Meitav Kaima means. Who is Meitav? So you can't explain it the way we just said. So what we have to end up saying is actually there's a double machlokas over here. Rav Shmuel and Rav Akiva are arguing on the question on the meaning of Meitav Sedeh or Meitav Kaima. In addition, based on what we said, what Rabbi Akiva's kavachomer lahektish is, that he agrees with Rabbi Shimon Manasseh about the business with hektish, it means that he's also arguing with Rabbi Shmuel on that. Rabbi Shmuel would hold your potter from paying hektish, and Rabbi Akiva would hold on the contrary, you chayim, and you have to pay them idis. Which idis would be subject to the first machlokas. According to Rabbi Shmuel, in an ordinary case, you're paying idis to nizik, and in the case of hektish, you're not paying anything at all, to shoreu. And according to Rabbi Akiva, in both cases, you're paying idis to mazik. You're looking at your own idis and paying the best of it. Well, continues Ravina Omar. So far, what did we come out saying? So far, we said this whole discussion boiled down to that our Mishnah, when it starts saying off Hanizak and Shaman Lahan the idis, must be according to Rabbi Shmuel. And what it means is that midaraisa a nizik gets paid land equivalent to his own meitav. But midrabbanan, because of Tikkun Olam, we make him instead get from the mazik theorist, in order that the mazik has more of an incentive to be careful. That's according to Rabbi Shmuel, because according to Rabbi Akiva, we said the whole thing is deraisa, the Mishnah doesn't need to mention it. Now comes Rabbi Noam, lo olam masnis in Rabbi Akiva. Actually, no, we could say that our Mishnah does go according to Rabbi Akiva. Dama midaraisa with the mazik shemin, and Rabbi Akiva holds that even midaraisa you go according to the mazik. But for Rabbi Shimon, when we say our Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Akiva, we mean that it goes according to Rabbi Shimon's understanding within Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shimon, Rashi points out, was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, so therefore we can have a shita of Rabbi Akiva that was sort of filtered through Rabbi Shimon's shita. And Rabbi Shimon, he did Dorish Taima Dikra. Rabbi Shimon, we know throughout Shas, has this concept, Dorish Taima Dikra. He looks at when the Torah gives us a mitzvah, he looks for the underlying reason why the Torah gives it to us. And then based on that, sometimes that comes out a difference in halacha. Rashi brings the classic example of it, which is the Mishnah in Bava Kamma. We've talked about it before. That the Torah tells us that when you take a mashkin from somebody for a chayv, you have to return it. In this week's parasha, it talks about you have to return it to them every night. In Kisese, it talks about that you have to return it to him every day, or the other way around, actually. In our parasha, it's Anvoya Shemesh Shivenulai. Over there, it's that you have to return it to him at night. So the Gemara explains depends whether what you're mashkin from him is something that he needs by day, like his work clothes, versus by night, like his pajamas, whatever. The Mishnah tells us, now the Pasuk tells us in Parashat Kisese, you're not allowed to take the mashkin of a widow as, you're not allowed to take a mashkin from a widow. You're not allowed to take her clothes as mashkin. Why? So the Chachamim say over there in the Mishnah in Bava Metzia, doesn't matter whether she's rich or poor, whether she's rich, in other words, and you don't have to return it to her, you're able to keep it until she pays off the debt, or whether she's poor and you need to return it to her every night because she has what to sleep in. Either way, it doesn't matter. Torah says not. Rabbi Shimon, not Tzinius, the Chachamim say it says Zeret HaKasim. Rabbi Shimon says, Dorish Taima Bikra. He says, look, why, after all, should there be a difference between an Amana and anybody else? The reason must be because if she's poor and you have to go there every night to return it to her, after a while, people are going to start talking. Where's this guy visiting her every evening? Something is going on over here. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon says, it makes sense to say that the Torah is telling us there's a difference whether she's poor or if she's rich. If she's rich, so you're not having to return it to her every night because she has other pairs of pajamas to sleep in, then in that case, no problem. You know, only if she's an Ani, only if she's a poor woman, then you have the Torah tells us that Issus. This is called Rav Shimon Dorish Taima Dikra.
What is the Issus again?
The Issus is that you're not allowed to take the mashkin. You're not allowed to take the clothes. There's a mashkin from her. Yeah. So again, we
why? In both cases, people are going to talk.
If she's rich, you don't have to return it to her every night. In this week's parasha, when it talks about... We have in this week's parasha as well, in Parashat Mishpatim, it talks about what's Lashonim? Chavol tachbel samach re'echa. If you take your friend's garment as a pledge, ad bo yashemesh tishivenu lo, you have to return it to him before sunset. Because that's what he sleeps in. So obviously, it's only talking about a poor person who has only one pair of pajamas. So therefore, if you take it from him as a mashkin, you have to return it to him every evening so that he has what to sleep in. But if he's a rich person, if he has more than one pair, then it's no problem. You can keep the pair of pajamas by you as a mashkin until he pays off the debt, or until he completely defaults on it, and then you sell that to get back the money, whatever it is. So therefore, the same thing by an amana. If she's rich, you don't have to go back every day returning it to her. So therefore, if Shimon says in that case, there wouldn't be a problem. Only if she's poor and you're having to return it to her every night, that's when there would be an issue, and that's when the Torah tells you to send to her. So that's called Dorish Taima Dikra. So we've had that here. We've had that concept here and there in the Gemara. Most recently, we had it in Sota a couple of months ago. We had that. We talked about the situation that you're not allowed to give two sotas to drink the sota water at the same time. We said that one reason for it. Shimon had said the reason is because because one of them will take courage from seeing the other one there, and they'll both kind of encourage each other, and therefore neither one will be induced to confess. So therefore, the Gemara explains that if we see that one or both of them are trembling in fear, we don't have to worry about that, and then according to Shimon, it would be allowed. That's Dorish Taima Dikra. So therefore, so Rav Shimon is Dorish Taima Dikra, and Tosfos points out, the Chachamim also agree that mitzvahs have reasons. Rav Shimon is Dorish Taima Dikra means he says that you can use the time to make a change in the application of the halacha. The Chachamim would say there's a reason, very nice, but that doesn't change the application of the halacha. So, Umatam Karma, so then in our Mishnah, Rav Shimon, again, following Rav Akiva's opinion, is saying the reason. Ma tam ani zotin shaman lahan behidis. Why does the Torah say meitah sedei or meitah tam yishalom, which according to Rabbi Akiva means the mazik's idis? Why are we going all the way to his idis, which is so much better than nizik's idis? Mipnei tikkun olam. The reason is the Torah itself is concerned about tikkun olam. So not tikkun olam here means different than what we learned in the previous parak and most of what we're learning in this parak, that it means a takana d'rabbanan. Here, Shimon is saying it's something d'oraisa, which is mipnei tikkun olam. The Tanya, as we learn, d'oraisa omer of Shimon, mipnei ma omer nizokin shaman lahem be'idis. Why do we say that nizokin get paid in idis? Because of people who steal or people who or chamsonim. Rashi explains the difference as a gazlan is somebody who steals away fields or other things without paying. What? No, it doesn't have to be a goy, it could be a yid. A chamson is somebody who forces you to give it up, but he pays you for it. So he extorts it out of you, but he pays for it. Yeah, we learned a couple of days ago, but Sikrifin is actually a special case. That's when the person's life is in danger. A chamson, that's a Sikrifin, the guys with the daggers, we'll learn about them more in our parak later. A chamson is not necessarily to that extent, but still he extorts out of a person to force him to sell his field, but he does pay for it. Yeah. So, Kadesh Yema Adam, this way, in other words, the point is, a person should say, Lomani goes over Lomani Chaybis, why should I bother stealing, or why should I bother Chaym, why should I bother extorting somebody's field away from him? Lomacha, or anything of his, Lomacha based in Yodel Rachas, Hebenethan Sodana, actually, eventually, based in is going to go into my property, and they're going to take my good field, they're going to base themselves on what it says in this week's parasha. Now you have to pay from the best of your field, the best of your vineyard. That is why the Torah tells us that you have to pay them out of Yiddish in order to discourage people from stealing and fancying. So therefore, so Anizak and Shamalan the Yiddish is Zoraisa, but that is Mepnei Tikkun Olam. The Torah itself wants to discourage people from causing from stealing or causing other kinds of Nizakini. The fortune, by the way, talk about. Not the only one, maybe, but it's one of them. Before Shem, by the way, talk about a question, why is the Gemara mentioned a chamsonim? If a chamson pays money, then there's nothing for him to reimburse later. I talk about different possibilities. Maybe chamsonim taka doesn't belong here in the Gemara. Maybe we're talking about the chamson promised to pay the money, and meanwhile he took the field and he hasn't paid yet, so you have to get it back from him. There could be a case, for example, where he extorted the field and paid a small amount, and later on the field improved in value, and now he's supposed to pay up, and now he's supposed to pay up the difference. Yeah. Okay. Rabbi Shimon continues in the Braisim. Why do we say that Bar Chayv gets paid out of Beinonis? Now we're going to learn tomorrow that Midoraisa. We're going to learn tomorrow that Midoraisa, a Bar Chayv, according to one opinion anyway, a Bar Chayv only gets out of Zibudis that have been upgraded into Beinonis. So why are we saying Beinonis? In order that one person does not see the other person has a nice field or a nice house, the Yomer, and he thinks to himself, let me go ahead and lend him money. This way, eventually, he'll default on the loan, and I'll be able to collect it from him from my debt. Creditory lending. Therefore, they said that he only gets Beinonis. No, but nobody's going to go to that much trouble just in order to get Beinonis. If they're going to be in order to get Yiddish. That's why I asked him, hey, the Zibudis. By that logic, you should downgrade him all the way to Zibudis. The answer is, in Kenap and Noel Delos Bifne Leuven. True, but if you do that, you're going to lock the door in front of lenders. Nobody's going to want to lend money to somebody else. If all I can get out of it eventually is Zibudis, why should I bother? Yeah. And it continues, Ksubas Ishib Ziburis, Divirav Yehuda. And the Brice continues, a woman's Ksuba gets paid out of Ziburis. This is what Rabbi Yehuda said.
Not preventing marriage.
We'll get to it in a minute, yeah. Rabbi Meir Omer Bebeinis, and Rabbi Meir says that she gets paid out of Beinis. Omer of Shimon named Ma Omer Ksubas Ishib Ziburis. Why do we say that a Ksuba gets paid out of Ziburis? Famous expression, because more than a man wants to get married, a woman wants to get married. In other words, therefore, she's not going to say, I'm not going to bother getting married if all I'm going to get out of it is Ziburis. She has an incentive to want to get married anyway. Dover Acher, and continues the Braitha, another explanation, a woman goes out of the marriage, meaning she can be divorced, willingly or unwillingly, because we've talked many times, Midoraisa, we don't need her consent to receive a get. It's only Chem Jeben Gershom that she does, but we're talking Midoraisa.
But
that's the point. But the man only gives a get out of his own will. Okay, the Gemara says, "My Baracha." What are we adding by that second? What are we adding by that second statement? How does that relate to her collecting from Zipporis? It's like this: Chitema. Because you might argue like this. Rashi says that what the Gemara is going to be presenting is it's not really a continuation of the previous argument. It's rather a separate argument. It's not really a reason for Zipporis, but rather a separate detail in why the Ksuba was set up the way it is. Tosfos learned differently, so let's talk about it after we learn the Yeah. No. According to Rashi, we've satisfactorily explained why a woman gets ziburis for huksuba because she wants to get married more than he wants to get married. Therefore, there's no incentive. She doesn't need the extra incentive of betinus. Now, according to Rashi, the Braisa has given us, and the Gemara is going to explain a separate concept. Why is the ksuba set up the way it is? That the husband pays ksuba when he divorces her, and not the other way around. Why isn't there ever a payment from her to him? Namely, the chitemet, kihechi the kimapla ihu, takinu la rabbanan ksubamine. Why don't we say the same way as when the husband is the one who initiates the divorce, then he has to pay her ksuba? And the rabbanan made a takana that he has to pay her ksuba. Kinafka ihi nami. What about if she's the one who initiates it? She's the one who starts causing arguments and then trouble and whatever in the marriage, and ends up, they end up divorcing because of that. Why don't we say then that maybe she should have to pay him a ksuba? Why don't we set up such a thing? For that, Toshma, that is why the Braisa have brought in the second point, Isha Yotzalu Ritzono V'Shaloi Ritzono, that a woman can be divorced willingly or unwillingly, but Ish Eino Motia Ritzono, whereas a man, when he gives a get, it always has to be willingly, which means Efshad Mashi Lobagita. He always has the ability to hold up giving the get. After all, it has to be given Mirzono, even if Beis Din is compelling him. After all, as Mephoshim point out, I mean, Adam Schiff talks about it, for example. I mean, he'll still, if he really wants to, he can evade the Beis Din.
And therefore,
when he ends up divorcing her, it's true. She may have triggered the whole thing by arguing or whatever it is. Ultimately, it's his consent that makes the get happen.
And therefore,
it's she who always has to pay her a ksuba rather than the other way around. Even if the breakup of the marriage is her fault, we're not going to say that she has to pay him a ksuba.
She can make his life totally miserable.
And then he'll be happy to give her a get. Fine, but that's the point. So, no, ultimately it requires his will. Rather,
it doesn't mean because he gives consent, he's responsible for not paying her. He should not receive anything. He should receive something.
No, but that's what we're saying. Because that's not the case. Because the rules of Gerushin are one-sided like that. It always requires his consent to give the get, and he's able to hold it up as long as he wants, whereas she can't. When the get is sent to her, it takes effect whether she likes it or not. Therefore, we have that asymmetry as far as the
ksuba. So now that we have a takana that she has to give consent.
Doesn't matter though. I mean, the Rabbeinu Gershon did not make a new takana as far as ksuba for that.
Why not? It should be symmetric then.
Maybe because after all, the husband still has an out with Hetamir Rabbanim, and she doesn't. I don't know. Anyway, Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos learns that this last piece is not actually a new argument, like Rashi's saying. It's not a new separate issue. It's rather continuing on this topic of you're arguing. We're trying to figure out why a woman gets paid a ksuba out of Zipporis rather than out of Beninus. So we gave the first reason because she wants to get married more than he does. Second of all, then, so Tosfos said, now what we're continuing is that on the face of it, you could argue that we have the issue of chinah. We have the issue of chinah. The Gemara is going to talk about it in a few lines. So we said that we do want to give the women a certain incentive to get married and to have, so maybe therefore we should argue that maybe therefore we should argue that 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 therefore we should that therefore we should upgrade her to Beninus.
So therefore,
we leave her at Zipporis because regardless, the fact is there is never a ksuba that she gives him. There's always a ksuba that he gives her because it always requires his consent, and therefore the chinah aspect is not really so relevant.
But we didn't answer the question why the ksuba has to be in Zipporis. It's a disincentive to her to get
married. The point is that the point is then
that what it is?
No, that it's not. That, well, that's the point. She doesn't need an incentive to get. That's the point. That's what Tosa is saying. She doesn't need
to get
divorced. There's no incentive involved for her either. Regardless, she can't. It doesn't take her consent to get divorced. Therefore, there's no reason for us to say let her get Bainanist so that she'll have more incentive to accept the get. Doesn't matter either way. She can't. Either way, regardless whether she accepts the get or not, it still takes effect.
Yeah, it's against her will.
That's what we're saying. Therefore, there's no reason. Therefore, we don't have a reason. Therefore, on that basis, to upgrade her to Bainanist.
That was a good reason to give her Bainanist this way, but that's so easily getting rid of her.
Well, that's what we said the reason for the ksuba to begin with is shall I take halab ain of light zero? Remember, we're talking 100 or 200 zuzim. Even if it's zibrudis, it's still a considerable amount.
But you can just argue the other way around. Since she doesn't have any say in whether or not the divorce happens, why not give her just edis then, since he's making the decision?
Because that's what we're saying.
Say just the opposite.
No, but that's the thing.
He has the ultimate decision. Then she should get Edith.
But he's giving her right.
He's making the decision. Well, she should receive Edith, not the boys.
No, but that's the thing. Because it could be from either side. It could be that he's the one who initiated it. It could be that she's the one who initiated it. We're saying regardless, even if she initiated it, we're not making her pay him a ksuba. Therefore, even in that case, regardless of the cases, we're always saying therefore that she gets zibordis. If she initiated it, then certainly it's logical that she gets zibordis. And if he initiated it, okay, he's initiating it. She has no say in the matter. Therefore, we have no reason to think that she should be upgraded to any more than zibordis.
Because she can never be forced to give a ksuba to him, she gets zibordis regardless of
that's
the case.
That's basically it.
Basically, that's what it is.
That's kind of what it is, yeah. Okay, anyway, so to continue on, I want to mention one interesting thing that Amma mentions in today's Gimel Parakim, that Amma mentions a concept which pretty much all the other Rishonim disagree with, that Amma writes, if a woman says that I want to get divorced because me'astihu, I can't stand having relations with him, then the Amma says that itself is grounds enough for a divorce. All the other Rishonim disagree with that. They say that itself is not a valid enough reason. In that case, it should be a meredes, as we learned about in Silvus. The Rashba says, based on our Gemara over here, seems to be a proof against the Rambam. We're saying over here that the get is always given birtsoinoi of the husband, implying therefore not like the Rambam is saying that you have a case like that where it's initiated by her. So various Rishonim and Achronim talk about how you can understand that according to the Rambam, on the contrary, since we're saying over here that ultimately it's true. In a case like that, so the Rashba, for example, says that this Gemara is proof against the Rambam. The Meiri and others talk about the possibilities that nevertheless, the fact is, even according to the Rambam, yes, Beis Din can compel him to give the get, but Kosher knows the Hashem Rotsani, so it's still the Rotsani after all.
Yeah.
And even that, like we said before, he's still, even if Beis Din is forcing him to give the get, he'd be able to evade it as long as possible until he actually decides, you know what, it's easier to just have done with it. So therefore, yeah.
Famously notorious.
Okay. Let's continue. Ksuba tishi b'ziporis. We said in our Mishnah that a woman's ksuba gets paid out of ziporis. Amar mazutra b'eder of Nachman. Loy amonan ela miyasmi. This actually that we're talking about, that she gets from ziporis, is only if she's collecting from yisoymin. So she was widowed, and now she's collecting from the yisoymin. Then only avol minei didei. But if she gets from the actual husband, if she was divorced, the bainanis, then she would get bainanis. Okay, then the question is, miyasmi mayhi ksuba siyashafi l'kol milinami. Then in that case, if we're talking about that she's collecting from the yisoymim, from the yoshim, then what's the chiddush about a ksuba siyasha? The same thing applies to anything, to any bal chayv. Dotsnan, we learn in the next part of our Mishnah, hei nifroim inachasi yisoymim elam inaziburis. Whenever you're getting paid out of nechasim of yisoymim, you always get paid out of ziburis. So what's the chiddush? The answer is, shouldn't it mean then that obviously when the Mishnah tells us superstition is Buddhist, means even if it's coming from him, and then if it's coming from Yisraelim, then of course she's like any other Baal Chayv. The answer is no. No, you could say that the Mishnah does mean that she's collecting from Yisraelim. Still, there is a chiddush in Ksuba. Because you might think because of China, So we talked about, and we talked about here and there in Tzubas and in other places. So Rashi says that Chinah is, we mentioned before that women have more of an incentive to want to get married than men do. Yosem and Masha, Ish Roitzev and Hasa, Harish Roitzev and Inase. However, Rashi learns Chinah is, we want to give men should have a certain chin in the eyes of women. We do still want to have that women should be attracted to men and want to marry them. Therefore, you would think, because of that, therefore we want to give her baininess in order to give her more of an incentive. That's it. Rashi consistently always explains that shas, that that's what chinah means, that we want to give the women an incentive to want to marry men. Tosfos learns the other way around. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. That according to Tosfos, chinah is the other way around. You want to have that the woman should have some finances of her own, so that when she's widowed or divorced, that she'll have some financial independence and be able to, and people will want to marry her. And then, the Aruch brings a third possibility also. He says that chinah means that while they're married, like this, if she knows that she stands to get something nice out of it as a ksuba, then she'll treat her husband very respectfully and do all the housework very well. So that's also chinah. Yeah. So you would think because of that, maybe you want to upgrade her to bainanis, even when she's collecting from Yisayimim. Kamash Malam, that would be the chiddush. But you still can't prove from that in a case when the husband is still alive, namely he divorced her, that she shouldn't be able to collect from the bainanis. Maybe that's not what the mission is telling us. Omar Rava, Toshma, come, let's bring a proof. Rameyer Omer Ksubas Isher Beninus. We quoted before in the Braisa that Rameyer says that a woman's Ksubas gets paid out of Beninus. You have to ask me, man. Ilemami Yasmi, you're going to tell me that Rameyer is talking about that she's collecting, that even from Yisoyimim she's collecting from Beninus? How? Lesley, the Rameyer holds its non end of frame and a chassi Yisoyimim element of Ziburis. What about what our Mishnah says, that when you're collecting from Yisoyimim you always collect from Ziburis? The Pashtas, Rameyer doesn't agree with that.
Regular false point.
Yeah. El Olam Minei. The pastor, so Meir must be talking about you're collecting from him.
You mean the husband?
From him, the husband, yeah, meaning that he divorced her. Which would mean that, yes, Mazutra is right, that at least according to the Meir, she collects from Bainanus when the husband is alive. McLeod's Rabbanon Savri Bizaburis. But that would prove, no, it's actually would prove against Mazutra. Because the Rabbanon evidently would say that even in that case, when he's still alive and she's a Grusha, she still collects from Ziburis. So what is Mazutra telling us that everybody would agree, even the Rabbanon, that she gets from Bainanus when he's alive? The answer is lo, no, again, you could say the mayor is also talking about collecting from Yisayimim. V'shayni ksubas ishu mitshum chinah. Again, you could argue he does accept the chinah argument. So before, the previous part of the discussion, we said that we set aside the chinah argument. Chinah, very nice, but nevertheless, we set that aside and we go according to the usual rule. When you're collecting from Yisayimim, you only collect from Ziburis. Maybe the mayor disagrees with that point. He does. Mishum chinah, we're going to override the usual rule that you only collect from Yisayimim from Ziburis. Amar Abaye Toshma. Our Mishnah says, "Hanizok in Shemelan Beidus, v'alchay v'beidus, k'subas ishe b'ziburis." And we have to ask Miman, who is our Mishnah talking about that you're collecting from? Even if Miyasmi is the Mishnah talking about you're collecting from Yisayimim, ma'hu k'subas ishe? Then why only k'subas ishe gets collected from ziburis? What our Mishnah saying? Afilu kol haninami. All these three cases in the Mishnah, even the Nizakin would collect from if they're collecting from Yisayimim. Ein Freim and Nichsi Yisayim Elam is Ziburis across the board.
That's
right. Yeah. So it must mean that it's collecting from the husband while he's alive. Just like Nizakin must be collecting from the Mazik while he's alive, and Baal Chayiv same thing. So the Basisha must be the same thing. No, because you could be talking about, our Mishnah, could be talking about a case that we're not talking about the actual mazik or the actual person who owes the money or so forth. We're talking about somebody became an orev on behalf of the nizakim that his son might do, or the debts, he becomes a guarantor. Now, there's actually in halacha, there's three kinds of orev, which we're gonna, in this little piece of tomorrow, we're going to talk about two of them, and Tosfos brings in the third. There's an orev. The regular case of orev is that the third party lady says, "Reuven, you lend Shimon money, and I'll be the orev." That's called an orev. The din is that when it comes to collect debt, when you're talking about a regular orev like that, Reuven has to first try to collect it from Shimon. Only if he can't collect it from Shimon, then he can go to Levi to try and collect it. Then you have Then I think he collected in vain in this, but I'm not sure about that. But that's what the Gemara is going to discuss over here. Wait. But no, we're going to say that he collects in vain in this. Wait. That's a regular Orev, though. Second case is called Orev Kablon. Orev Kablon. So Rashi explains over here that a Kablon is that he actually takes something from the Malga and gives it to the loiver. In this case, we're talking about a Ksuba. He actually takes something from the husband and gives it to the wife. An Orev Kablon, the din is, the Gemara explains in Baba Basra, there you have the ability to go after the Orev fruits. You can go after either the loiver or the Orev, whichever one you want. Then you have a third case, which the Gemara talks about over there, in Baba Basra, called Nosam Lezeb and Nosam Lezeb. The Orev comes and says, I'll be the go-between. You want to lend money to Shimon, give it to me, Levi, and I will give it to Shimon. The difference is that in that case, Reuven has no ability to go to Shimon at all to collect it from him. He has to collect it from Levi because he's the one he gave the money to. Levi, in turn, will have to go and then take Shimon to base. Maybe he's glad. Levi is a good friend of Shimon. I don't know. There is such a thing. Nothing was ever nothing was ever. So, if we're talking about over here that he's an Orev for the Nezakin or the Balchov or the Ksuba, so far we're talking just an Orev. Wait. So therefore, b'hai ki dine. So each one then, we apply the din to the orev the same way as we would to the original Baal Chayv or Mazik or what have you. Nezokin or Baal Chayv, Mechayim Gavu. So Nezokin and Baal Chayv, which ordinarily are collected when the person is still alive, Iunami ki magbi ki Mechayim magbi. So therefore, if you're collecting from the orev, so now in the case where the orev's son who committed the nezek or who borrowed the money has died, so yes, he's dead, but the orev, the father, is still alive. Then we continue with him as we would have with the son while he was alive. So therefore, we're not going to say, therefore, that you can only collect from Ziburis, like you would with a regular Yorish. No, in this case, since he was an Orev, then actually we're talking, obviously, the son died childless, so his father was inheriting it. So therefore the Nizik gets from Idis and the Baal Chayv gets from Benidis. So the Nizik gets from Idis, the Baal Chayv gets from Benidis. Exactly as though the original Nazik or Baal or Loiva was alive. The ksuba, which ordinarily is only collected after the person dies. Now, okay, there is the case of gerushin, but gerushin is less common. When the woman is going to be collecting, who is she ordinarily going to be collecting from the yesonim? Iunami. So therefore, in this case, when the father was an orev, same thing. So also the gvia is done just as if. Just in the same way, the son's already dead. If he was dead and his sons had inherited his property, she would only be able to collect from Ziburis, like an ordinary situation. So even though in this case the Yorish happens to be the Orev, doesn't change things, it's still Ziburis. You can't prove from that, though, that in an ordinary case where there's no Arevus involved, that her husband divorced her, that she shouldn't be able to collect from Benjamin, which is Mazutra's point. In that case, then, what are you talking about? The din is, when do we say that an orev is on the hook for paying back, and therefore that there is a shibud over there, and the original malva could collect from him? That is where there was actual, where there was nezek involved, or where there was a halva involved, where the person actually gave out money. When it comes to a ksuba, there's no shibud in the first place. Because when he takes on the Sarevos over there, there's a couple of things. We'll learn about it more in the Gemara, actually, tomorrow. That number one, she didn't actually give away anything of value. It's not like she lost something from a hezek or paid out money in a loan. So therefore, there's less of a reason for there to be an Arev in the first place. And second of all, he's facilitating the doing of a mitzvah. But because of all of that, an ordinary Orev of a Ksuba is not on the hook for the amount of a Ksuba. So what are you talking about? That if the husband died and his father is the Orev, then you're going to take away property from him to pay. He's not on the hook for it. If the husband died and he didn't have any property for her to collect it out of, that's it. She's there's nothing to do.
Orev is only on the hook until.
It's only on the hook when there was a Zikin or a Chayv involved, not by a Ksuba. The answer is the Kablon. We're talking about over here that he wasn't just an ordinary Orev, he was an Orev Kablon. So Rashi explains that what happened was that the Chassan had given the wife had given her the talpalin, that there was, these are going to be what your ksuba is eventually going to be paid out of. She gave it to her. She gave it to her. She gave it to her father-in-law. He became the Odev Kavlon for it. So she gave it to him to hold on to. Then he returned. Then he or she, in different view, sorry, so Rashi returned it to the husband. But then he was an Odev Kavlon, because again, Rashi's shita of Odev Kavlon is he actually handled something involving the Arevus at some point. He actually handled money or metalpalin that had to do with the Arevus. Tosfos argues with that, because in that case you would have that would be the nus of a nus and the yad. That would be the case where he's taking from one and giving to the other. So Tosfos rather follows the shita of most of the other Rishonim, that Orev Kabbalah, you become an Orev Kabbalah by saying, I'm a Kabbalah on myself to pay this chos. Not by actually picking up something from point A and giving it to point B, but just by verbally saying, I'm not just an Orev, I'm an Orev Kabbalah.
Meaning
that I'm accepting that I may have to pay it out of my own nechassim, even if the loiver or the chassin or whatever has, no, if he defaults, then even an ordinary order is on the hook.
Right.
We're talking about even if he doesn't default, that I'm on the hook. That's an order kablon. Okay, the question is, that's actually machloikas in Rav Basra. According to the opinion that the Kablon is under a shibud, even if the loiva has no nechassim at the time, shaper, then we understand. Okay, so then he became an Orev Kablon, so even by a suba, then he's on the hook. Okay. El manda omayi isle mishtabed, ilesle le mishtabed, but you have the other opinion over there that says that only if the loiva at the time of the halva had nechassim, then the Orev is willing to have smichus das, he's willing to be mishtabed himself, because the likelihood is he's not going to have to pay. Right now the loiva has nechassim. But if he doesn't have nechassim, then he's not mishtabed himself, and therefore we can't go collect from him. So even by an Orev Kablon, in this case, obviously the son had no nechassim, because if you did, you wouldn't be going to the Orev in the first place. So then, on what basis are we? No, that's what we're saying. That lo yiparam in Orev Chila. Yeah, but you're not allowed to demand it from the Orev first. The answer is very same, but to have a little bit of. One possibility is you could say that the son, the chosen, had property at the time, but then it got damaged. So now, by the time the ksuba is going to be paid off, or any of these other debts, it's gone. The very same, or another possibility, if it comes to with something on behalf of the son, a regular person, an ordinary person, yeah, it's not going to be mishabed himself unless he knows the other guy has the chosen, and he has a good chance of not having to give it up. One second. No, I'll be there in 30 seconds. But if it's his son, then he's willing to be mishabed himself above and beyond the normal thing, and therefore, yes, we could say that if he's an Orev Kablon, then yes, there is a shibud over here, even if his son didn't have him cost enough time.